You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Tuna is one of the most popular food items in this country and, of course, in Japan. But our days of eating tuna casseroles and fancy sushi may be numbered. Richard Ellis, author of Tuna, A Love Story, published by Knopf, joins us today to discuss what makes the tuna so great and why its existence is threatened. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to the show. Hi. And when you say love story, are you talking about a love story of the animal or of this delicious food?
Actually, I'm talking about both, because as a scientist, I appreciate the way this animal is put together and the way it goes about its everyday business. It is the most spectacular, I think, the most spectacular fish in the sea. It's one of the biggest. It's one of the fastest. It is warm-blooded, which means it can raise its temperature from the normal temperature of the ambient water to 75 or 80 degrees, which means it is a super predator because, like an athlete, it's always warmed up. It's beautiful looking. That's part one. Part two is, yes, everybody loves tuna. People like it in sandwiches and salads. But, of course, the major part of the book, the major thrust of the book, is how much the Japanese like raw fish.
Now, how did it come to be different from other fish? Are there other warm-blooded fish?
Yeah.
Are there other fish that can swim 55 miles an hour?
The fastest fish is supposed to be the sailfish, which has been clocked at 68 miles an hour. And there are other warm-blooded fishes. Curiously enough, they're all very large, dominant apex predators. The swordfish is a warm-blooded fish. The great white shark is a warm-blooded fish. And the mako shark is a warm-blooded fish.
I thought sharks were so ancient that they wouldn't have been.
They're not even more ancient than bony fishes. They evolved more or less simultaneously. So one isn't more primitive than the other.
Now, you're a scientist, but there's also a literary side to this. Hemingway just loved tuna, didn't he?
Well, Hemingway liked the sort of macho concept of besting animals that were bigger than he was. And he liked shooting big game. He went to Africa and shot lions and buffaloes and things. And one of the aspects of big game killing is big game fishing. It's hunting for fishes that can weigh 1,000, 1,500 pounds, and it's a huge effort. And you feel very proud of yourself as a man, as a hero, when you succeed in bringing a poor, dumb fish to the gaff, and then you can hang it up over the mantelpiece or eat a chunk of it or whatever. And Hemingway was very famous as a fisherman. He, in The Old Man and the Sea, he wrote about a fisherman, an old Cuban fisherman, who pulls in a marlin, and the sharks manage to eat most of it before he gets in. And he wrote Islands in the Stream, which was also about fishermen. But probably the most noteworthy author who was also a big game fisherman was Zane Grey. Mm-hmm. And Zane Grey, who wrote Riders of the Purple Sage and other timeless westerns, took virtually all of his royalties, and his book sold about 13 million copies. So he was a very wealthy man in the 20s and 30s. And he invested in a fishing boat and went around the world hunting for swordfish and marlins and tuna.
How much tuna did people eat in this country?
Well, if you count the cans of tuna that you get in a supermarket, or the sandwiches that you get in a diner, or the salads that you get anywhere, tuna is the most popular fish in America.
And do we eat as much of it as the Japanese?
We probably eat more of it than the Japanese because we greatly outnumber the Japanese. And if you think about supermarkets, and every one of them has hundreds of cans of tuna, then we probably eat more than the Japanese. But the tuna that is in those cans is not the same tuna that the Japanese favor so highly.
And it's only been fairly recent that sushi has become popular in this country, I'm sure, adding to our tuna consumption.
It's only been fairly recently that sushi became popular in Japan. One tends to think of it as an ancient culinary tradition that they've been doing for hundreds of years. But in fact, they only began to eat raw fish when refrigeration was introduced into Japan around the 1960s, because prior to that, all the Japanese and anybody else could do was either smoke a fish or pickle it or dry it. Now you could refrigerate it, you could freeze it. And it was once the fish could be frozen that the Japanese began to thaw it out and eat it raw.
The Japanese eat a wide range of fish, but tuna is generally the most popular.
Well, it's the most, what's the word I need, the most heavily favored. I suspect that not a great many Japanese eat this very, very expensive bluefin tuna. But at the Tsukiji Fish Market in Tokyo, every single day, there are 55 acres covered with fish of every conceivable description. Octopuses, squid, clams, crabs, tuna, swordfish, marlins, every kind of fish you can think of. And every single day, that is vacuumed up and repeated the next day. So the Japanese depend to a very great extent, even with the concept of importing food from everywhere now that it's possible, but they depend to a great extent on things that come from the sea. And in fact, I suspect it's the Japanese mindset that enables them to do that. Because they believe that they're an isolated island nation and they must eat things that come from the sea. They don't have to, of course. Japan is a wealthy first world country and they can therefore import anything they want. If they want to eat hamburgers or hot dogs, they certainly can.
Although when they do it, they have to have special beef, Kobe beef. But is tuna as popular in other countries? In France, it's just part of the mix, isn't it?
Yeah. You see, what happens is...
Although there's canned tuna from Italy, that's so much better than the canned tuna from
this
country.
Probably. But very little of it is bluefin tuna. The bluefin tuna is essentially the fish that this book is about. I do a lot. I explain what the other fishes are, what the other kinds of tuna are. Albacore, which is what you get as white meat tuna. Skipjack, which is what you get as light meat tuna. But it is the bluefin tuna, this great big red meat fish. If you got a can of bluefin tuna, it would be like opening a can of hamburger. Mm-hmm. It's the bluefin tuna that the Japanese are so crazy about. And it's the bluefin tuna that is being fished so heavily for the Japanese market.
Now, until fairly recently, the bluefin were ignored as a food fish, weren't they? It was only with the growing popularity of sushi?
Yeah, the bluefin tuna at the turn of the last century was called horse mackerel. And nobody wanted it. If anybody caught one by accident in a net, they would chop it up and serve it to dogs and cats because people didn't want to eat it. It was only after it became identified as a big game fish. You have 1,000 pounds of fish, you're not going to eat it. So you have to figure out what to do with it. But the idea of hunting these fish, these 1,000-pounders, led to people trying to taste it and see what are we going to do with this? We can't just throw it away. And so people began to eat bluefin tuna. But then this craze began in Japan for sushi. Just think about it for a moment. 30 years ago, maybe 40 years ago, in, say, New York City, the idea of eating raw fish was so crazy. Who would ever want a piece of raw fish? And now it is the high-end restaurants in New York. The most expensive restaurant in New York is a sushi bar. It's
Masa.
And
where they serve a lot more than bluefin tuna.
No, they don't. The main course.
I've had the great experience of eating there he kept on bringing out all these fish I'd never seen
before.
Right,
but the main course is bluefin tuna. Certainly they serve other things to precede it, but the main course at $600 a pop is a big hunk of raw fish.
Luckily, I didn't pay for that meal.
That's why I didn't go, because I didn't pay for it either.
Now, bluefin is from the Atlantic?
Bluefin is from all over the world. They live in the temperate waters of the world. One of the breeding grounds is the Mediterranean. Another is the Gulf of Mexico. A third is an area north of Australia, south of Indonesia. And a fourth is, curiously enough, off Japan. Bluefin tuna are these great, great migrators. A bluefin tuna can, throughout its life, can swim across the Pacific Ocean, turn around, and swim back from Japan to California and then back.
Where are they generally fished?
They're fished most heavily in the Mediterranean. Every single country, with the exception of Israel, on the Mediterranean, and just put a map of the Mediterranean in your head and start going eastward from Spain to France to Italy to Greece, et cetera, and then back around to North Africa. Every single one of those countries, Libya, Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, they all catch half-grown bluefin tuna in the Mediterranean, put them in pens, fatten them up, kill them, freeze them, and ship them to Japan. The fishing in the Mediterranean is so intense and so heavy and so illegal that the World Wildlife Fund has called for a complete shutdown of the Mediterranean fishery.
And why isn't Israel doing it?
I think they have other things to worry
about. But, I mean, it's
about.
It's a kosher fish. Isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah. My guest is Richard Ellis, who's written a book called Tuna, A Love Story. It's published by Knopf. So are bluefin the only endangered tuna species?
Yes. Other tuna are fished heavily. Skipjack, the tuna that ends up in cans as light meat tuna, is the single most heavily fished fish in the world. Other tuna are prodigious breeders, and what's happening in the Mediterranean is they are catching them before they reach breeding size. So if you catch the fish before they're able to breed and kill them, they're not going to be able to breed, and the population will plummet.
A listener says, aren't most bluefin conceived near Walker Ridge, where oil drilling takes place?
I don't even know where Walker Ridge is.
Well, and I don't know whether that would have much of an impact one way or the other. An oil spill
would certainly have an effect on them, but I doubt if the tuna themselves, being these great long-distance swimmers, are going to hang around an oil rig for any length of time.
So they farm much of the tuna these days. We're talking about huge fish that are farmed?
Well, that's not exactly farming. It's not farming the way salmon are farmed. Salmon are raised from eggs and then kept in pens until they're large enough to be killed and filleted and sent around the world. Tuna are only farmed in the way that I mentioned, which is you catch half-grown fish. They have not succeeded, as far as I know, in getting tuna to spawn and then raising the tuna from eggs.
You say tuna ranching is similar to cattle farming.
Yeah, it's a kind of feedlot technology where you raise the animals to a certain size and herd them into a corral, which is exactly what it is, even though it's floating. Herd them into a corral and you kill them and then you butcher them and then you send them off to market. So it's very much like feedlot technology for cattle.
Is the slaughtering humane, or do we even think in those terms?
I'm not sure any slaughtering of any food animal is humane. As Michael Pollan pointed out once, you don't want to know how the hamburger got to the restaurant. You don't want to know what happened to the cow before the hamburger got to your restaurant. And so I'm not sure that any of it is humane. I mean, the way chickens are raised, the way pigs are raised, the way they're all slaughtered is probably not humane. I'm sure that in the terms of efficiency, they try and do it as quickly as possible. They don't want an animal to die a slow, lingering death. And since they're dealing in such large numbers, they want it to happen quickly. But humane, I'm not sure, is an applicable term.
You describe a Japanese tuna auction. What are they like?
Well, they're interesting in that every single day at the Tsukiji Fish Market in Tokyo, thousands of frozen tuna are lined up and they're auctioned off individually. People will go through, the buyers will go through and cut a little tiny sliver of fish from this frozen carcass, feel it with their fingers, smell it, and then since the fish is ultimately going to be eaten raw, taste it. And sometimes they find a fish that the buyer finds to be so perfect that he will pay an extraordinary amount of money for it. One tuna was sold several years ago at the fish market in Tokyo for $173,000.
Oh, my.
One fish.
You have to wonder what one slice of Toro.
Well, this was before it got sliced up. This is the fish frozen and sitting on the floor, actually, of the fish market.
Listeners are concerned about you saying frozen. They thought that you had to be fresh.
Yeah, well,
they're defrosted, really?
Listeners, it isn't, though. It's mostly frozen, most of the tuna, probably with the exception of a place like Massa, where if the tuna was caught, say, off New England, it was shipped in ice, not frozen, shipped to Japan, and since it was such a fine fish, turned around and shipped right back. So the fish has made a round-trip journey across the Pacific Ocean to get from Gloucester, Mass., to New York City.
I don't mean to pick on Massa, but somebody said here recently that the high-end fish, the kind of fish that you get at Massa and the best sushi places, more likely to have high levels of mercury than the stuff in the cheap sushi bars.
Bluefin tuna is a fish that has not a significant but a high mercury level compared to the FDA regulations. It is not enough to make you sick. It's enough that you will keep it in your body. It doesn't degenerate. It doesn't go anywhere. There was a story of a family in San Francisco who thought that fish was brain food, and so they fed their 10-year-old son tuna fish from a can three times a day. The kid began to get uncontrolled spasms. He couldn't talk. He was shaking like a leaf. They took him off the diet, and he lived. But eating tuna once every 2 weeks or once a month is not going to have enough mercury in it to bother. It's rather like secondhand smoke. If you stayed in a car where everybody was smoking cigars, you would probably get sick. But if you pass somebody on the street once a day who blows smoke in your face, it won't kill you.
You say that bluefin population is endangered. What impact would that have on the environment?
Well, it's a question that we really don't know the answer to, but the answer is likely to be very, very bad.
Because there's a food chain,
there's
a completely food chain, an ecology of the sea.
A complicated food chain, and the tuna are top predators. People tend to think in a rather simplistic way that if you take out a top predator, another top predator is going to come in. What really happens is if you take out a top predator, the animal that they fed on, the level that they fed on, proliferates because nothing's feeding on that next level down. So the proliferating next level down then eats everything below it. And it changes everything. So taking out a large number of top predators, and it's happening with sharks. Sharks are being killed by the hundreds of thousands every year for their fins. If you take this out, it upsets everything. And we haven't been able to see the end result of that, but I can promise you it's not good.
Hasn't the tuna fishing industry been regulated?
It is regulated. It's regulated by a sort of an industry organization called ICAT, the International Convention for the Conservation of Atlantic Tuna, and they set quotas for the various countries that they're able to catch. The trouble is that ICAT has no teeth, as it were, and so if they say the limit for France, say, is 20,000 tons. The French go out and catch 40,000 tons, all of which goes to Japan. And the French go out and catch 40,000 tons, and they say, catch me if you can. So what? So we catch more fish. We're making a whole lot of money doing it. And now the French are among the worst, but certainly just try and think of how we might be able to control Tunisian or Libyan fishermen. We don't like what you're doing, you Libyan fishermen. Why don't you just stop? Okay, chief, says Gaddafi, we're just going to stop fishing because the tuna is becoming endangered.
And you say that it's impossible to breed them, that they resist being bred
they
in
captivity?
They haven't
so much resisted as people who have tried to do it have not succeeded. The Japanese in a lab managed to raise a couple of tuna. There's an organization in South Australia where I was last year, and they have built a facility with a specific goal in mind of raising bluefin tuna from eggs. And this year, they succeeded in getting the tuna to spawn. I don't know, because they won't tell me, whether the eggs lived and whether they're growing. I wrote to them because I was there visiting them in 07, and I wrote to them and I said, well, what happened? You got the fish to spawn. What happened? They sent me a press release that said no details are going to be released at this time. Now, I don't know whether that means they succeeded, they failed, they're going to try again next year. But even if they had succeeded and it was in March of this year, the fish by this time would have been the size of your thumbnail. So they're hardly about to show up on a sushi platter.
My guest, Richard Ellis, is a celebrated marine artist whose paintings have been exhibited in museums and galleries around the world. His latest book, it does not have any of his illustrations, although
it's on
it does
the cover.
Have,
that's my illustration.
Okay, the cover, and then there are some photographs inside the book.
I took a lot of pictures in South Australia, and I actually drew the line drawings of the other kinds of tuna, the albacore and skipjack and whatnot. But this book seemed to be best illustrated. I've illustrated entire books, but in this case, it seemed to be best illustrated by photographs of people doing what I said they were doing, because I wasn't going to draw a picture of fishermen hauling in a net in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. But there are photographs of all this happening.
And I really don't want to see the bluefin go extinct.
Oh, I don't. I love the bluefin.
In fact, the book is called Tuna, A Love Story, published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Leonard, thank you.